Welcome to another episode of the Big Pod Machine. Jason Williams along with Gordon Wittenmeyer, and Gordon coming to us from St. Louis as we record here. The Reds getting ready to head into the final series of the season. Because this is such a fluid situation, catch all the coverage from Gordon and on Cincinnati.com. I'll be writing a column over the weekend, keeping up with the up-to-the-minute playoff hunt as the Reds, barring a miracle going in, looking like they're, probably going to be on the outside looking in, but crazier things have happened. Another thing that, is really with the end of the season here, whether they make the playoffs or not, the end of the season is almost here. The local Baseball Writers Association of America chapter in Cincinnati, of which Gordon and I are both members of, have to decide on the team awards, the end of the season team awards. And Gordon, our deadline for that is this Sunday. And
those awards, because I think there's some really strong, debatable cases to be made for a lot of guys for some of those awards.
And that's and by the way, that's the MVP, the best. It's the MVP of the team, best pitcher, and the tough guy award,
the good guy award. But we should do a tough guy award too, because there's been a lot of guys that have played with stuff this year.
And I think all of those are there are multiple players. There's no real clear cut. I think you can make an argument for multiple players in all of those categories. But Gordon, you and I wrote a column on Cincinnati.com last week in which we tackled the MVP award. And certainly at that time, things are fluid and they change a lot. But who you got for your MVP of this ball club?
Well, before I forget, just to be clear with everybody, we're recording this on the off day, going in those last three games. I know I got an email from somebody asking me about that one time and said that it would help. So there's still three games left, right? Somebody to, like TJ Friedl hit home runs in four straight games. He's got 18 home runs and 17 bunt singles and 27 stolen bases. There's one Red in history that we know of who's had 20 home runs and 20 bunt hits. And that was Bobby Tolan in like the 60s.
Leads the majors in infield hits.
Right. I mean, so since we wrote our column, he had four straight games where he did that. And for a long time, first half of this season, he definitely looked like he was becoming the MVP of that team. But that's not my pick. So my guy, Spencer Steer, who leads the team in almost every offensive category and has just been kind of this under-the-radar, steady, solid performer all season long, and really helped him bridge some gaps when some other guys were out. So that's my guy. I know you don't agree with me.
I didn't agree with you last week, but you've convinced me, and I think with circumstances that have happened, I've come around to your pick. And
wow,
because at the column, when we wrote the column early last week, I was making the argument for Jonathan India, and at the time the Reds were almost 20 games over 500 with him in the lineup. And, just the impact that he's had in the Reds openly, players and manager David Bell openly talked about when he was out in August with the plantar fasciitis, openly talked about how much they missed him. And that said a lot. And the fact that, this is a team that's obviously, as they go into the weekend, they're hovering around 500 and they're going to finish at least 500. But it's a team that's a 500 ball club, let's give or take a few games. And the fact that they were, at the time we did that column, they were with, this was after the Wednesday game against the Twins at home. The Reds were 62-48 when India was in the lineup, and they were 15-27 when he wasn't. Obviously, he had missed a big chunk with the foot injury, but I don't know that. And then you put that together with his impact on the lineup, his impact in the clubhouse. When you talk about this, it's most valuable player. So I see the most valuable player as sort of this all encompassing, that it doesn't just. And I understand, like, some people were going to say, yeah, it's all about stats, and fair enough.
Well, that winning percentage stat, that when he's in the lineup, I mean, that's a
stat. That shows value. That shows – no, you're right. That's right. You're right. I was thinking more individual stats, but, yeah, you're right. That shows his value to the team.
But just so we're clear here, like, that – they've only won two games since then, since we talked about that.
Exactly.
He's been in the lineup every day.
He's been in the lineup, and he's really scuffled really since coming back, you know, in his own, you know, at the plate. And I have to, you know, after the week and a half since we wrote that, I have to come to agree with you that Spencer Steer, I think, is the clear cut MVP of this team. He's been there every day for these guys on a team that's been riddled with injuries. It's been, had all kinds of, you know, and what those injuries have done to the lineup, and all the mixing and matching David Bell has had to do. The one guy that he's been able to turn to every day for the entire season has been Spencer Steer.
And correct.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that part of them trying to patch things together, especially over the second half, has been trying to cover fielding positions, yep, when they've had guys out. And Steer has played five different positions. He started at five different positions for him. Now, some people will say, well, he's not particularly good at any one of them. And I would push back a little bit on that. I would say he can handle, for any given day or series, all of the five that he played. And that's the two corner outfield spots, the two corner infield spots, and second base. And I would say that probably three of those, at least, he's pretty good, and maybe even better at one or two of those spots than the guy that gets most of the playing time there. So, and credit to him, he hadn't played any outfield, and he handles, in particular, left field, I think, pretty well. So that's been huge. Just that versatility has been massively valuable.
No, I agree, and you know, just the fact that, I mean, goodness, he's played 154 games this season. That's at least 15 more than anyone else has played.
Right in the ballpark of that. It might be even a little more than that. But, you know, even what the thing about it too is, it really stands out on a team that's had all these injuries this year. It also stands out because he's one of a cast of thousands of rookies too. No, the guy only had a month of experience in the big leagues prior to this year. He's still a rookie. This is the longest season of his life in terms of just sheer games played, innings played, not to mention sort of the stressful, meaningful games down the stretch. And here's what's going to happen. He plays all three of these games in St. Louis, which he will, barring some kind of an injury or unfortunate situation. He's going to tie Pete Rose for the franchise record for most games played by a rookie. That's pretty impressive.
That's impressive. Yeah, it is. It really is. So, I think Spencer Steer is your 2023 Reds team MVP. Let's go to the other two. Look, do you have anything else to add there on the MVP?
Well, I would just say that, you know, I don't want to short shrift anybody here, because when you look around, you could make the case. I mean, there was one all-star on this team who wasn't a position player, and that was a closer. Mm-hmm. Some people would tell you, where would they be without Alexis Diaz being as lights out as he has been most of the season, closing down the leads they got? Because obviously, I mean, they're going into this St. Louis series, they're not technically eliminated yet, three games to go. That's pretty impressive for a team that lost 100 games last year. And obviously mm-hmm. that means every single game has mattered. So he's been huge. And then, you know, their starting rotation has been the clear weak link all year long. And the fact that Andrew Abbott, who started in Double A, came up in June, and even though his workload kind of got to him at the end, his first 10 starts were lights out. They went, I want to say 8-2 in those starts. He had a 190 ERA. That stabilized the rotation in a way no other pitcher did this year. Certainly no other pitcher that you didn't see coming. Mm-hmm. And that's all. They also won a ton of games in that stretch. That's when they had, I think he won three during that 12-game winning streak. He might have even been the winning pitcher in the first of those games, or at least started the first win in that streak. So he played a disproportionate role in this team being where it is. So you could give him credit. We talked about Friedel, what he's done. I think he's been pretty darn valuable. And I know I'm missing somebody here. Fraley's been hurt. He's been important when he's been out there. Benson, since he got called back up in May, has been one of the better hitters in the league. And he just kind of,
well, guess who else? I mean, because he's been hurt, and so he's a little bit of a forgotten guy right now, but Matt McClain.
Great point, because I just forgot about him.
Yeah.
And when he was healthy this year, from mid-May to the end of August, he was their best player. And up until just a couple days ago, when Friedel had that streak of home runs, he led the team. He was on the IL for almost a month and still led the team in WAR on Baseball Reference. That's pretty damn impressive, and especially when you're talking about a guy that didn't debut until May 15th.
And if you're talking about best player overall, and I think, you know, let's see how, well, let's just say, you know, everybody, all of these guys, you know, well, I think they'll all be back next year. I think you're probably, over the long haul, the best player of that group we're talking about here is, in terms of position players, is Matt McClain. At least it seems that way.
I agree. There's one guy who's got, you know, higher ceiling and bigger tools. But he hasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a ways to go to reach that ceiling. And there's a ton of swing and miss there. Obviously, Elly De La Cruz. Mm-hmm. But Matt McClain right now is a polished, good big league player who figures to get better going into next year, does a lot of things really well. He is their best player. I would say that's pretty clear. And that's just not me saying it or you saying it. I talk to people in baseball from the other teams when they've seen him. I talk to scouts. And right now, I mean, when he was playing, that was a universal opinion. That was everybody I talked to. I didn't talk to everybody in the game, but the dozen or so people I talked to that offered an opinion on that, he was the player they mentioned every time.
Well, you brought up some of the pitchers, and so let's transition to that second award. The, you know, three awards that we in the Baseball Writers local chapter have to pick. So we've discussed MVP, and now it's best pitcher. And
is there a debate on this one?
There might be, but I was going to go ahead and say you go first, and then
I want to hear. I know.
I mean, okay. So here's what this is. You mentioned him just a little bit ago. My pitcher, my best pitcher, is Andrew Abbott,
and that's mine too. Yeah,
you went through it, and even after his struggles here down the stretch, obviously his entire career has pitched more innings than he's ever pitched. You know, had a rough outing in Cleveland the other night, but he's still taking the ball and he's trying to do everything he can. So at the end of the day, in 21 starts, 8-6, 3.87 ERA, for a guy who wasn't expected to be here this year, that's pretty doggone good. And to me, you know, if you're, I kind of understand even like you said, making, you could make the argument. I don't think ultimately he is the guy you vote for. Because I think you make the argument MVP for him, but certainly best pitcher, I think, is a good, you know, I don't think this one's all that close. And at least it's not as, yeah, it's just, I think this is even, now that it's all kind of shaken out with the injuries and all that stuff, you know, I don't think the Spencer Steer thing is, I think that one's pretty clear cut now. And I think best pitcher with Andrew Abbott's clear cut as well. What do you say?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think we should point out, though, that, I mean, part of this is just how much trouble they've had with that rotation. Nobody's really been in there to pitch all season long. Graham Ashcraft came as close as anybody, and he finished on the IL, had surgery for two fractures in two different toes on his right foot. And he also had a really rough stretch in the middle of the season that was kind of costly when you look at that. Was right about the time that they were missing other guys and Abbott came up. But yeah, so when you look at it that way, and nobody really has, except for the relievers, nobody really has the full season of a sort of body of work. It's kind of, you look at Alexis Diaz, who's been a sort of a high caliber spectacle type of a performer at the end of games. And then really you look at, when you start breaking it down, you look at, what did Andrew Abbott mean to this team as a starter for those innings? And in particular, when they went from a losing record, 6 or 7 games under 500 when he debuted, to when he won his 10th start, they were a half game out of first. And by the way, they won 3 games out of 13 against the Brewers, which would have been their first round playoff opponent. He won 2 of them. So there's little things like that too, but
yep.
I agree. By the way, I wrote a story on him after he made his last start in Cleveland, kind of looking ahead. He didn't have enough gas in the tank to really do much for him down the stretch, but because of how he approached things and that they could trust that he would have the poise to go in and give them what he did have, they kept giving him the ball. Just wasn't enough at the end. But I wrote about kind of looking ahead at next season and also kind of this subject of what he did do for this season.
Well, and I think, again, even though you don't give a group of guys best pitcher or MVP, but I mean, if you were, and you and I referenced this in the column last week, the Whitmire and Williams column, the bullpen. And if you had to make a list of the absolute top 3 reasons why they're here, I think number 1 would be that their bullpen has saved them.
100%. Yeah. If you went MVP for position area,
yeah,
they would finish 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. Right.
That's how important they've been.
But yeah, and I think it's certainly that has to be mentioned. The unsung, you know, it's cliche, but the unsung heroes of that team, and oftentimes of a lot of teams, are those bullpen. So
you know, and more so this group than a lot. I mean, the relievers a lot of times. I mean, the classic thing is right, failed starter. You know, so you kind of. You fall into the bullpen and then you just kind of survive banging around as a reliever. But this group, more than most, they're waiver claim guys, minor league free agents, guys that, you know, didn't get picked when they were exposed to the Rule 5 draft. All of them, man, are like, you could say rejects. And they came together as a collective sum greater than their individual parts.
Yep.
And for most of the season, and it might still be the case now, but I know as of one point last week, they were by at least a couple of measures the best bullpen in baseball. I don't know that you can overstate just what they've done. I tried to sum it up and sort of wrap my mind around it in a story I did probably, well, it was when they were in New York. So what was that, a couple of weeks ago? If anybody wants to go, just Google some of the names of the relievers in that story should pop up. But it's really amazing. I list where every one of these guys.
I mean, yeah. Like Sam Mall, a guy that kind of bounced around, he wasn't really highly thought of. He didn't bounce around. He was always with Oakland. But, you know, they pick him up and kind of a ho-hum, you know, he gets brushed under.
Did you know who he was when they picked him up?
No, he gets brushed under the rug, because of all the flack of any big splash at the deadline. And he was a depth piece, but the guy's gone out and he's given up two runs in 23 and two thirds innings so far for a 0.76 ERA. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Look, one of the big stories, if these guys had made the playoffs, if these guys had made the playoffs and the Cubs didn't, one of the big stories would be that the Cubs thought they had a deal done for Sam Mall. And then Nick Kroll went in and got basically traded him out from under the Cubs. So that would have been a great playoff storyline. And, you know, as we record this, it's still theoretically possible, but that's one hell of a long shot theory. But just take a look at that. Baseball people who were looking for left-handed relief help had their eye on this guy. But baseballreference.com, in their pronunciation guide, didn't even have his name pronounced right. And we asked him that on day one. I mean, how anonymous are you when you've been in the big leagues for, what, 5-6 years, and you get to a new team and nobody knows how to pronounce your name? And the media relations department didn't. The writers didn't. Veteran writers. That was one of our first questions to him. I'm not lying. That's kind of, to me, sums up who these guys in the bullpen are. And yet, look what they've done. I think that might be the story of the season of the Cincinnati Reds this year.
Yeah. And last but not least, the good guy award on this team. And can you share with folks like what that encompasses? Does that mean how they are in the community, how they are in the clubhouse?
I think it's
what does that mean?
I kind of think it's like the MVP definition, where different people kind of have the latitude to define it a little bit differently. But some people get selfish about it and say, well, how did he deal with me in the media? Well, I mean, that's kind of BS. Although obviously that would play into it, right? If the guy handles the media spotlight well and all that. But, you know, you kind of observe it. How does he treat teammates? How does he treat clubhouse people? How does he treat fans?
This one's not that clear cut, because there's a lot of good guys in that clubhouse. I mean,
there are a ton of good guys. Are
good guys. Yeah.
I mean, if you talk about 28 guys in there, I mean, there's not a guy I would classify in that room as a bad guy. And, and I've covered a few that I would call, you know, not great people or even bad people over the years. There's not one guy in there. And probably, I mean, if you just kind of weeded out the guys that kind of keep to themselves or get a little moody at times or whatever, there's probably at least 20 guys you could vote for and not be wrong.
Yeah. So. And so.
Oh, I thought. Was doing this. Well, okay. I think this is really tough, because I think. Yeah, India could deserve. I think Derek Law in the bullpen, I think, is a guy. He's a really good guy. And I was talking to somebody on the team about this the other day, somebody on the pitching side, about the power of what they've been able to do with the power of personality in that bullpen and how it's been able to hold things together. And I would argue, I mean, Derek Law is such an exceptionally good, upbeat guy and a competitor with whatever he's got. That you could make the case that he would deserve something like that. But at the end of the day, I went with an everyday player. And even though it was a close call, my choice on that is TJ Friedl.
Ah, man, you just took mine.
Ah,
That's exactly my guy. We actually agree on something. How about that?
Jeez. Well, you tell me. Tell me your rationale on that.
I think it's, you go down the list and you could make the argument for TJ, like we made the argument for TJ Friedel for MVP. You think about just, and again, I know this is a pretty broad category, but the guy's a pro, like in all this. I'm not picking him over because, you know, three other guys stink at being a good guy, or 10 other guys, or 15 or whatever. It's just, I don't know. He's just the guy that literally, this is one of those ones that he was the first guy that came to mind when I saw a good guy award. Mm-hmm. And I'm impressed with his story, a walk-on in college, an undrafted guy in the majors, how he's battled and fought, and he's done it with, you know, he's a gentleman, with grace, he's mm-hmm. always good with the media, he's a good teammate, he's appreciative of being in the major leagues, and this, me saying this isn't that he's this and someone else is not, and so I'm not right. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that he just stood out. This is one of those gut feeling kinds of things, and or the first person that comes to mind, and you kind of go with it. And TJ Friedel is the guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much I can add to that. I don't think I can say it any better. I mean, all those reasons you gave are the reason he's my pick. I thought even after some really tough losses where he had a right to kind of hide out or get chippy.
Yeah.
He didn't. He represented his team. He kept a really solid, strong attitude about it. Even though, you know, like he got asked after they blew that 9-0 lead. Mm-hmm. He got asked
to the Pirates.
Yeah, and they lost 13-12. That was the mortal blow to their season. Yeah,
I think so.
A lot of guys didn't want to talk. I don't think he wanted to talk, but he made himself available and he was asked, like, when that happens, what does that feel like? Because I think the writer, I'm not going to pick on the writer for asking that, because we were all kind of searching for, like, how do we just get him to, how do we saw it. We all saw it. I mean, we just wanted to put something on a tee to hopefully get a response, mm-hmm. him talking about that moment. And he said, it feels like we were winning 9-0 and lost. Now, obviously, you know, he's not happy about it. You know, he hears the question and that's kind of a throw it right back answer, but it wasn't, he didn't do it angrily, and he was just kind of showing the emotion of the moment and what it felt like. Didn't demean anybody, but was available in a very tough moment to try to represent his team to basically the fans, because mm-hmm. ultimately that's what you're doing when you respond to media questions. I thought that was just another good example of what all that stuff that you already said.
Cool.
We got one more, buddy, because they don't do this in the local chapter, but man, I tell you what, there's probably a couple guys out there that maybe there should be a tough guy award for guys that tried to play through some stuff and try to will this team to something when it looked like something special was on the line. I want to know, when you look at that, if there was a tough guy award, like who would be in the running for that, and who would you pick?
First guy comes to mind is Jake Fraley on that one, trying to battle through that toe injury.
He's still playing with a broken toe.
He's still playing with a broken toe. And I think, too, if you step back and even look at the broader scope, there's a guy who He openly talked about battling depression last year, thought about quitting baseball. As openly talked about, addressing that and addressing things that he was dealing with. And that says a lot for him. And I think that personifies a tough guy. And then he comes through and perseveres through this broken toe and trying to give this team. I think this is just another category where you can make an argument for multiple players.
Oh, no doubt.
But
Jonathan
Indy is one. But to me, like, it's another case of he's the first guy that came to mind. So go with my gut, and I'm going with Jake Fraley.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, I look at take a look at Graham Ashcraft. Graham Ashcraft had two fractures in toes right next to each other, big toe and the one next to it, and continued to pitch. This was an ongoing thing for multiple starts, and he pitched well. He finally just couldn't do it anymore. It was his push foot. So there's some power involved, and then some impact on his mechanics, and he finally just couldn't do it anymore, and they had to shut it down. And even then, he and the team, but basically he said, okay, fine, we'll schedule the surgery, but I'll keep throwing. I'll keep my arm moving. Mm-hmm. And if there's a way for me to come back before the end of the season, I will come back. Let me keep working on this. And ultimately they came up on the date. What was it? Last week. I think it was during that last homestand when it was surgery day, and all the way up to the eve of surgery, he had held out hope and tried and then couldn't and had the surgery. But Graham Ashcraft is definitely one that comes to mind. Jonathan Indy has been playing with plantar fasciitis, and anybody that's had that knows how painful that is. Plus, he's been spiked, I don't know how many times this year over at second base, including just on this last homestand, and has stayed in the game, hates coming out of games, will almost fight somebody if it's about coming out of a game, even if he's, even if his leg falls off. So he's one of those guys. And even some of the guys I don't want to make light of it. So don't at me on this. I'm not making light of anything. But even like Stuart Fairchild went on the concussion list after making a catch against the wall, banging the wall hard enough that he had a concussion. The initial results of examining him in the dugout didn't produce any obvious signs. So he stayed in the game for another defensive inning. There was another ball that he went after and didn't get to, almost got to, again, at the wall. And then further tests, he comes out of the game and he goes on the concussion IL. But this is a guy that, obviously you hit the wall that hard, you got a right to say, hey, man, ouch. Let me out of the game. And he didn't. So, there's a bunch of guys in this team. But bottom line, I'm agreeing with you again. I can't believe this.
Wow.
Jake Fraley would be my guy. Yeah. Did we just agree on all the guys? I think we did.
We did, because we both agreed on Andrew Abbott as the pitcher, best pitcher, and have mercy.
I'm starting to have a good influence on you, is what I think's happening.
Oh, is that what it is?
I'm pretty sure.
And don't get cocky.
What? Don't be what? What'd you call me?
Cocky.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
Don't get cocky, son. Let's let's shift into our Bleacher Feature fan, listener, reader, emails and feedback. And I tell you, a couple weeks ago, we debated Joey Botta's future, and man, that blew up my inbox, and just so many emails of people. And again, it's funny because I didn't ask you about this before we start recording, but I got a ton of emails from people agreeing with me. So then I was sort of thinking, I'm like, I bet you got a ton of emails of people agreeing with you on that. I said that they shouldn't bring him back. You said I made the argument for him not to come back. You made the argument for him to come back. So thanks for all those emails. You and I also then this week wrote a column about what about Ellie De La Cruz's future. And does he play at shortstop? Does he go to the outfield? You made the argument for him to go to the outfield. I made the argument for him to stay at shortstop. And so our reader email, there's plenty of emails here, but this is just one. It just kind of caught my eye, and the emailer didn't leave his or her name, but it says De La Cruz should have been in the outfield in the minors. His arm speed, height, and power, they're the best since Willie Mays. And this
Willie Mays was short.
Willie Mays was say it again?
He was a short guy.
Short. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought
he was a short guy. Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, he did say height. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So he was not like Willie Mays in the height. I was thinking you were. I thought you meant shortstop, and I'm like, Willie Mays wasn't a shortstop, but you meant he's a short guy as a his height. Yes,
I do believe he was an infielder for Birmingham.
Okay. But you this reader obviously agrees with you. I'm not ready to compare some of the other tools from De La Cruz to Willie Mays yet, but I could understand where people would already just in kind of the raw tools that he has and the way he throws the ball, his speed and his range and all that. But let's talk quickly about that this week. You know, I did because the Reds are going to have to make a decision with all this overabundance of infielders, middle infielders in particular. You know, you made the argument that he may be best in the outfield. Can you share a little bit about why you think that is?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I start from, well, you could start either direction. You could start from his tool set and say, how would that translate to the outfield? And my God, picture him with the best in baseball sprint speed and the hardest thrown infield assists in the StatCast era, which is since 2015. So he's thrown 99.7 and 99.8 miles an hour to get outs this season. One of them was from the outfield on a relay. So probably roughly maybe 150 feet to the plate. So he's got Roberto Clemente arm strength, right? Mm-hmm. Ichiro arm strength, you know, Dave Parker arm strength out there in right field. If you went right field, he's got the kind of speed and range that you could picture him in center. And I mentioned this in a column, but I didn't really explain it. Like maybe you would start him in center and then eventually work him up to a level where you could move him over to the right. And the reason I say that is, especially if you're a middle infielder, but the reads off the bat are easier in center field. And so the idea is, if you're going to transition a guy out there initially, that might be a way to do it. The Great American Ballpark isn't the same level of challenge that some other ballparks are anyway, whether it's San Francisco for all the quirkiness, Boston for the quirkiness, Coors Field for how big it is, because it's fairly routine outfield and it's not very big. Anyway, the idea would be, get him some work out there and put him out there and maybe he could be a star. But then the other side of it is, right, you look at how many shortstops this club has, and the best one, might be Edwin Arroyo in AA right now. And I believe that as elite as Ellie's tools are, that Matt McLean right now is a better shortstop. And in fact, you could make the case that Noelvi Marte is a better shortstop right now.
Well, that's good that you bring that up, because our column posted a couple of days ago or yesterday or last night, actually, as we record on Thursday. And I got a text from a buddy of mine who's a very great baseball mind and really follows the Reds closely. And he's like, hey, I actually like Ellie at third and Marte at short. And I'm like, I like that one, too.
Yeah. And part of it, too, is part of this whole calculus, right? How all the puzzle pieces fit.
Yeah.
Is things like, what's Jonathan India's future?
Well, I mean, if you did do it, if you do go that way, then that does bring into question where, because then McLean would be your second baseman. And I made the argument in the column that I like India as potentially at first base, given, not knowing Votto's future. I still think the jury's still out on CES. And it should be, because he's only been here a few months. So
yeah, right.
Yeah.
Marte, for that matter, right?
Marte as well. I don't know, but just you gotta have India in the lineup every day if he's here, and I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be, unless they can, I don't know, find some great deal to deal him for a starting pitcher. But yeah, I don't know. I know some people were chuckling at me for that, but look, this is a team that has a lot of interchangeable parts. And if you don't like Jonathan India at second, maybe he plays the position where his defense isn't as critical and moves over to first. And that keeps him in the lineup every day, but also keeps him happy. He's playing every day in the field as well. Because I don't think making him a full-time DH is going to be beneficial to either side.
And, no.
And he's already pretty much, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he's publicly said that, right? That he doesn't want a DH every day.
And I think
really,
so.
And what young player really does? I mean, unless you're just all you are is a hitter. And this team, this isn't like your traditional American League DH. This team has a kind of a revolving door at DH. And so I think they'll probably continue to keep it at that.
Yeah, you would want that. Yeah. I mean, that's ideal. You don't want to lock somebody, especially nowadays with how big pitching staffs are and how short benches are. You just don't want to lock up one guy who doesn't do anything for you in the field. If anything, you want a whole bunch of guys that can play a couple of positions. And I'll say this too, by the way, you mentioned first base, where it's maybe not, defense isn't maybe as critical. In some ways it's more critical than second base. Yeah. You have to be adept with the footwork, and it does matter.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
How you handle throws, and it's its own hot corner, especially for, big slugging left-handed hitters, that pull the ball down that way. And the other thing, I'm making the case right now that maybe second base isn't such a defensively important position, which I believe that. And if that's the case, more reason in my mind to move a guy like McLean, make sure a guy like McLean is playing a place where you can get the most out of him.
Hmm. Well, certainly I think you and I will continue to probably debate that going through the winter and into next season. And we certainly have plenty more time to see how that all plays out, and more time to think and process it as well. So,
no doubt.
He's Gordon Whitmeyer. His email is gwhitmeyer@inquirer.com. I'm jwilliams@inquirer.com. Keep those emails coming off the column, off the podcast. We read all of them. Sorry, at least for me, I can't get to all of them. In terms of feedback, but I read them all, and I want folks to know that, and they're valued. And even the ones that are critical, even in some ways, I value the ones that are critical even more, because it helps me see things a little differently. So that's good.
I'll send you some emails.
Go away. G. Whitmeyer @inquirer.com, J. Williams @inquirer.com, and we'll catch you next week.